Spirit Blade Underground, episode 402. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 402.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. Still Peter Franson here from Spirit Blade Productions, working hard to produce entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies about all that, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, a combo review of the VidAngel content filtering rental service and the sci-fi movie Ex Machina, which I never would have watched without VidAngel. Plus, a look at living for the moment versus living for eternity as we continue in the book of Hebrews, and also some other cool announcements and things like that that I want to draw your attention to. So lots of stuff to do. Let's get to it. I wanted to highlight for you today a service called VidAngel at vidangel.com. This is something that apparently YouTube figured out that I would be interested in because I've been bombarded with ads for it lately. I wanted to tell you a little bit about it. It's a filtering service that allows you to rent movies and filter out content based on your preferences. You can edit out vulgar language or sex scenes or nudity or violence. There are even tears of violence sometimes. I've understand from the website you can even edit it. You can filter out Jar Jar Binks if you want. So, I mean, each movie has its own kind of custom filters. And, you know, the Jar Jar Binks thing I think is a real one. I didn't check. But most of them are about, like, potentially offensive content in movies and in TV shows as well. In one of the main promos for VidAngel, they reference Game of Thrones. And they kind of show a cartoon dad sitting down to watch Game of Thrones and then seeing his son on the couch and then activating some filters, you know, so that there wouldn't be a problem while he watches it. So I was really interested in this. Now, lots of believers are going to have kind of like different triggers and different things that might cause them to just kind of enter into sin mentally or otherwise as they're engaging in entertainment. For me, I don't have a problem with language. I don't have a problem with violence. But I have noticed that seeing nude women does bad things to my mind, and it just kind of disrupts some relational things mentally with me and my wife that I just figured out a long time ago. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have any of that potential for, you know, content to be messing with me and just bringing things into my mind that I don't want there. So I've avoided a movie like Ex Machina for a long time, but when I found out about this service, I was like, oh, so I could maybe give Ex Machina a try, because I'd read, I usually, before I watch a movie or review it or whatever, I try to check and see if there's any information beyond the basic rating description that will tell me kind of blow by blow how much content is in the movie. And I specifically do that when I see, you know, nudity listed in the small text beneath like an R rating. So a movie like Ex Machina, when I investigated, I was like, oh wow, yeah, this has way too much nudity. I don't want to mess with this. So I was kind of bummed, but I did a pass on that. But anyway, I found out about VidAngel and I was like, okay, well, let's give this a shot, because this would be a chance to check out Ex Machina. So I rented Ex Machina. I watched the whole thing through. I put the filters on specifically for nudity. They did have some other filters that I decided to just kind of leave open because they were kind of ambiguous. Like one of them was immodest, like being immodest. And I was like, okay, well, that's not quite as clear and mechanical black and white of a description. That's kind of up to the subjective feelings, I suppose, of the person that's creating these filters. So I just filtered out what is nudity. I felt like, okay, no matter who you are, you can probably agree on what nudity is pretty closely with other people. So I put the filters on there, watched the movie, and what's interesting is the filtering is pretty seamless. I was like, are they going to show me like a black screen or something, or what's going to happen? And they just edit out those scenes. And so, like, seamlessly, the footage in the movie that has nudity is just stripped out of the movie, and, you know, there's no black screen or anything. And there's just kind of, it just instantly jumps to the point after the nudity takes place, which was really cool. Created kind of like a seamless experience. The only problem with that is I was watching, and at one point I was like, oh, what? Okay, there's some editing going on here. All right. And then I just realized that I must have missed something really crucial during the scene. So I went back, took the filters off, and just kind of kept track of the movie in my peripheral vision for most of the time. And I realized that there was like a whole dialogue scene going on while this woman was kind of sitting in a chair naked and being kind of like questioned by somebody. And it was like really important kind of plot stuff. I was like, oh, crap. Okay. So then I put the filters back on, finished the movie. And actually after that point, I did notice a couple other like edit jumps. But thankfully in those particular scenes, there were some kind of like accompanying collarbone shots, you know, because when they're making movies that they're aiming for an R rating, they're not just going to always put nudity in every shot that involves a character being naked. They're going to do close-up shots and stuff like that, and some shots that don't have nudity, so that they can avoid that NC-17 rating. And so in this instance, there were enough of those kind of collarbone shots for me to understand, okay, so she doesn't have any clothes on her now, and she's doing this thing, and okay, I understand the scene and what's happening in the story, you know. But that wasn't the case with this other section. So I think part of me would really like it if there was an option to have a black screen instead, so that I could still hear what's going on. And I think that would fix most of the problems, especially since in R-rated movies, you know, as opposed to like what I assume would be like in an NC-17 movie, usually if there's like kind of sexual activity going on, there's some kind of like sexy music track or something like that to go along with it. And so like if I'm in a theater, I can just go, okay, I'll just look over here until the bow-chicka-bow music is done playing and then, you know, we'll be good to go. You know, but I mean, I suppose it's possible that in some scenes there would be like vocalizations during coitus, and I'm like I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that, you know. So but I think that would probably be pretty rare. So anyway, that is a you know, a downfall of partially of the system itself that VidAngel uses, and also possibly, you know, it's just the nature of movies and stuff. Like, I talked to somebody about Game of Thrones a while back, and I said, well, is it something that, like, if I could just skip the scenes with the sex or the rape or whatever it is, and I'd be okay, I wouldn't miss anything? And they're like, no, there's sometimes stuff going on in those scenes, even like nonverbal stuff, that if you're not looking at the screen, you'll miss nonverbal storytelling that's going on. So I think that, you know, even though they put Game of Thrones in their promo for this, I don't know. Somebody would have to tell me their thoughts on that. But it doesn't sound like this is always going to be like a solution for everything. But I think in most cases it'll be a solution. I would guess it would be a solution for if you're wanting to just cut out some violence, if you're wanting to like watch a movie and your son's on the couch or whatever, and like, you know, it's later in the night, you'd, you know, watch it with the full blown guns blazing, guts flying, but right now you want to avoid that, so you can, you know, take that out. I don't know, I didn't check to see if in horror movies there's, you know, a kind of like scary meter, like when there's a scary face, make that disappear. I don't know, you know. Probably I just won't watch horror movies when my sons are sitting on the couch. You know, I don't do that anyway. But so really, I'm not. It's for me, this service wasn't so much about like something that I could use so I could watch movies I like while my boys are around. It's more about I want to protect myself from certain kinds of content. And so I don't think it's a service that I'm going to use a ton. Because, you know, for me personally, I think that, you know, if there's like a one or two brief instances of nudity in a movie, then, you know, I'm usually fine. It's when they're peppered throughout, whether they're brief or long, and I'm just kind of like, oh, gosh, they keep coming at me, you know, that I would enjoy, I think, having a service like this. But anyway, I should talk about the pricing. Oh, no, wait, let me mention first how they do the language filter. They don't put a beep in there. They just silence the actor. And now I didn't use the language filter, so you'll have to check this out for yourself. But what they say is that they remove the speech from the actor, and then they fill that space in with ambient sound from the scene. So apparently they painstakingly take a sample from the scene, the background, maybe in between lines of dialogue, and then they stitch that in whenever language occurs. I mean, it's really interesting. It just looks like a lot of work is being put into this. It doesn't seem like it's a simplistic process at all, which is really cool because it results, I think, in an experience that is going to be closer to maybe what the old edited television, you know, versions of movies were like, which I would love to go back to. What I would love is if they would, I don't know if actors even do this anymore, but they used to very commonly, in anticipation of these movies airing on TV, have actors like record alternate lines instead of like swearing. They'd say, you know, like in Darkman, I think Liam Neeson, when you know, he at one point he says, "Take the effing animal," you know, he doesn't say effing, of course, you know, but it's like a stuffed animal that he won for a girl and his face was starting to bubble, so he had to leave, you know, before his face came off or whatever, you know, and she's like, you know, freaking out. She's like, why do you need to leave? Because she didn't see the bubbling yet. Anyway, in the TV edited version, he said, "Take it. Take the fuzzy animal." And that's like just a blast to watch edited movies and see what they come up with. I really wish that they would still keep recording those if they don't anymore. I don't know if they do or not. And make those options on Blu-rays, like an alternate audio track, you know, just because it's, I mean, I don't mind the language, but it's just freaking funny to see how creative they try to get. So so it'd be fun if they had something like that in here. But, you know, I would certainly take silence, you know, if I can't have the other. So, all right, this is going way too long. I want to talk about the pricing because that's an important factor. They are advertising themselves as a competitor to Redbox, you know, and they're saying like $1 movies, you know, yes, they are $1 movies, but that's standard definition. If you want like high definition, which might not even be 1080, it felt like I was watching a 720p resolution on my computer monitor as I was watching the movie. But it's at least, I think, 720. That's $2 for a high def rental of a movie. But it's not really a rental. See, VidAngel does not have the legal right to rent out movies to you. So what they do is they sell you a movie and you pay $20, $15, $25, I don't know. I think most of them are $20. You buy the movie and then you have 24 hours to sell it back to them and they will take it back minus the cost of, you know, what of the rental fee. So like the $1 if you did standard definition or $2 if you did high def. And then the refund is by default made into store credit, VidAngel store credit. Now you can cash out at any time and get that money back onto your credit card that you use to purchase it, which is what I'm doing because I'm not going to use this service very often at all. But it's just kind of weird. They almost make it sound like when you're trying to cash out, like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you don't want to use VidAngel anymore? And I'm like, well, I don't want to commit to that. I'm, you know, are you going to delete my account or something? All right, you know, and so I'm still. They make it. You know, I think they're really trying to, you know, keep your money, of course, you know. But anyway, I put out like a thing to sell it back to them, and they make it sound like it's really easy, but they do require you when you're selling it back to them to give a reason for why, and if you don't, they'll email you and ask you. And then, oh, what else? Well, and my refund hasn't been processed yet. They said it takes 7 to 10 days. But it's funny because when I clicked on to like say, okay, I want to sell this back, they called it a request. And I'm like, really? You guys made it sound at the beginning like this is going to be really easy. I know it'll take 7 to 10 days. I'm fine with that. But why is this a request button and not like a refund button or something like that? So anyway, the jury is still ultimately out on how the whole refund process works. Maybe I'll try to put like an annotation note in here after I get that refund processed. But for now, I think it's a neat service. It's one that I definitely will take advantage of again at some point in the future. It's just not going to be that often that there's a particular movie that I'm like, I'd like to watch, but A, B, and C, and so, you know, this service would work for me. Most movies that I want to watch, I'm fine with content-wise. So, but anyway, vidangel.com is where you can check out those services, and hopefully you'll find that to be something that's useful to you as you're kind of discerning your way through the geek entertainment that you enjoy. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network. We've got the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more information about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Time machine activated. Retro review launch sequence initiated. Historical destination locked. Temporal displacement in 3, 2, 1.
Jung, 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 jung. Jung, 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 jung.
I don't know. I couldn't think of another like AI-based movie that would have a memorable theme or something. Anyway. Okay, so I'm Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions, here with my uncut review of Ex Machina. Now, I know this one hasn't been out for... It's been out for a while. I originally was going to see Midnight Special today, but it's a very limited release, and it wasn't showing in any local theaters, so I'm going to have to wait on that. But I did finally get around to seeing Ex Machina, and I was able to do so because of the services of VidAngel.com, which I would highly recommend. I avoided this movie for a long time, because in doing some research about it, as I try to do whenever there's, I'm going to see an R movie, I want to avoid nudity because it has negative effects on me. I won't get into that. There's a video I put on here on like what's wrong with nudity and sexuality in and fantasies in entertainment that I hope you'll check out to kind of get maybe some insight on how nudity can be bad for us even if we don't feel like it's affecting us negatively at the time that we're exposed to it. That's the reason I avoided this movie for a long time. But then recently I was bombarded by ads from VidAngel. Well, as I've been watching other YouTube videos, and I was like, oh, this looks like a cool service. It allowed me to filter out all the instances of nudity, and so I was able to watch the movie, and there was only one point at which I was like, I missed something here. So I went back and turned off the filters and just kind of kept track of the scene through my peripheral vision for most of the time and realized, oh, okay, this is there's major dialogue going on during this scene while this woman is sitting there naked. And then I put the filters back on and was able to enjoy the rest of the movie without getting lost or anything. This is a decent movie. The synopsis basically is that an employee of a technology firm, possibly in the near future, we're not really clear on that, is awarded by lottery within his company a week with the company's secluded billionaire the owner of the company, who is developing AI in secret and hopes to use this employee who has come out to visit him for a week to test it. So let's talk about the story and the script and the pacing. It's a sci-fi drama, so it's slow and thoughtful and philosophical in a predictably limited way. More on that later. It's fairly dependent, the drama and your engagement with it is fairly dependent on you caring about the AI character Ava, and what becomes of her, as well as the young employee Caleb who's interacting with her, and it's also dependent on you believing that a fairly normal man like Caleb would be attracted to a robot with a few convincing female parts, rather than totally weirded out by the fact that, okay, her arms and legs and like most of her head are mechanical. You know, I think that premise of a guy like being interested in a machine like that, I think it only kind of works in a movie. I think that there'd be a significant adjustment period. Even if like you're dealing with a person who's actually a woman, and like, you know, all they have is like prosthetic limbs, I think there's a period of adjustment. There's some things you have to kind of let go of in order to become romantically interested. I think most guys, you're just going to have to kind of let go of kind of some of your physical desires. The premise, I think, is one that like largely just works in a movie. So let's talk about the cast a little bit. Alicia Vikander, if that's how you pronounce her name, I'm not sure. I mean, she does fine as the AI Ava character. Personally, I didn't feel like her raspy voice fit well. But then again, I just tend not to like the sound of people that have raspy voices that sound like they've spent a lot of their years as a cheerleader or just yelling at people. It just kind of makes me, I don't know, there are very few people. I can think of one friend whose wife, I'm like, oh no, her voice is fine, you know, but everybody else that has a raspy voice, at least in movies, I'm like, oh, that's making me feel, I don't know. It's just a thing. I felt like her performance was fine, though. It was kind of like a subtle Data from Star Trek type of performance, but with a few more emotions in the mix. Nothing world-shaking. I know she did win an Oscar, but I don't think it was for this. I'd be surprised if it was. Anyway, Domhnall Gleeson, I've seen him in a few movies recently. One was... Was it called Out of Time or About Time? I think it was called About Time. A time travel romance, which I would highly recommend. Really, really great stuff. But anyway, I've been seeing him pop up in a few movies lately and have been enjoying watching him. I think he's a solid actor, and he was a great choice for Caleb, the young employee in this movie. Although I felt that it was hard for me to relate to some of his choices, as I mentioned earlier, and as I'll maybe get to through my other comments later on. But I thought his performance was good. And then Oscar Isaac, who I've really been fascinated by ever since I saw him in Sucker Punch. He's great as Nathan, the secluded billionaire genius who's created this AI. He's repulsive and fascinating at the same time. I mean, Oscar Isaac, except for in Star Wars, where he was given nothing to work with virtually, he's a really engaging actor to watch. Excuse me. Okay, so stunts visuals. The visual effects in this movie are quiet, you know, and largely about replacing the AI character's limbs with mechanical ones, but the look is pretty convincing, and it does a lot, I think, for the experience. So the visual effects are great, but I mean, and it is a visual effects movie, but it's not like, pew, 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 you know, it's not, you know, what you would typically think of, you know, when you think of a visual effects movie. But what I really want to get to in the meat of this is the relevance section. You know, in other words, is there anything in this that's of spiritual, moral, philosophical significance that might, you know, bring about some worthwhile thought or conversation after watching this? I think absolutely, although in a way that to me is kind of tiresome. I mean, where to begin with this topic? I hope to do in the not too distant future an entire video on the subject of AI, and I will try not to repeat too much material in both of these videos. I'm going to end up repeating some, just because there's a lot I feel like that needs to be said about this topic, even just to discuss this movie, that nobody that I know of is saying as they're talking about these AI concept stories, you know? So movies about AI, even smaller, more artistic ones and thoughtful ones like Ex Machina, almost all seem to have the same core conflict that's intended for the audience member, and that is, can an AI potentially be a person? A person, like you and I, are persons, you know, or people. The waters are usually muddied in these kinds of stories by sticking to, and in conversations about this subject, by sticking to that vague and flexible phrase, artificial intelligence, you know? And the way that those words are used is very broadly and sloppily, I think. Artificial and intelligence, both. And we're, you know, in some ways we're still kind of nailing down what intelligence is, but personhood is what I think all these movies are really getting at. And I think we'd be better off having conversations about these movies and asking the question, okay, is this a person? Not is it intelligent or an AI or whatever. Is it a, or even consciousness, is it a person, is I think maybe more helpful language to use. And without exception that I can think of, all AI stories that pose this question try to make you care about the well-being of an AI as they are examining or exploring this question. They give human-like characteristics that are cute in the case of Star Wars droids, or innocent, or fragile in some way, or they try to trigger compassion in us as we suspend disbelief to enter into the experience. Even Nathan, the billionaire who created the AI in this movie, he didn't want to hear Caleb's intellectual analysis of the Ava AI. He was like, no, forget all that. I don't want your analysis. I want to know, how do you feel about her? How do you feel about her? As though his feelings were the most important factor in determining whether or not she was a real person. As though our perception of reality is equal to that which is real. But we don't have perfect perception. And so, you know, and reality does not conform to what I perceive. If I'm walking across the street and I look both ways and I don't see that bus coming, that bus is still going to kill me. So our perception does not equal reality. So anyway, moving on here, the Turing test. The Turing test is a central concept of the movie. And now this is a real test developed by Alan Turing in 1950, and there was a movie called The Imitation Game made about him, which I thought was pretty good. And it was developed by Turing with the goal of evaluating a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from that of a human being. The problem is that people think of the Turing test as something capable of identifying something as being a person in the same sense that you and I are. And I don't think even Turing intended it to be that. But I think in kind of pop culture, you know, that's how it's used. It's really elevated up there. But really, in actual scientific circles, this is a highly debated and questioned and criticized test. And the capabilities of this test are highly criticized. In reality, all this test does is measure how much something might seem like a person. And again, we can't just decide what is real based on our ability to perceive, okay? Because our immediate perception is very limited. To evaluate whether or not a machine can have personhood, we first have to agree on what personhood is. And we don't. At least in the real world, we don't. Most AI-themed movies take a materialistic approach, as though that is the default, that is the only option. We're not even going to bring in any other concept of what a human is as an option. So in the materialistic view, human consciousness or personhood is defined solely in physical terms. A dualistic approach suggests that there is both a physical and non-physical component to who we are, and that our consciousness, while interacting with our physical being, you know, our brain, our synapses, there's and all those kinds of things, there's a correlation certainly that we can see, but a dualistic approach would say that does not necessarily mean that our consciousness, our being, who we are, is limited to those physical realities, and that it is actually non-physical, at least in part, and can therefore not be reproduced by physical, purely scientific means. So those who want to use the Turing test as kind of proof of personhood, of the personhood of a machine, are limiting their understanding of reality to only that which the scientific method can tell them. But the discipline of science isn't equipped to reveal everything that's true, everything that is real. Only what is physically true at best, in accordance with, you know, repeatable, observable phenomenon. This kind of anti-supernatural bias that most of these AI movies start with is certainly popular even among those who would consider themselves spiritual, but it doesn't make logical sense to rule out non-physical realities before your investigation of truth even begins. Now, there's an interesting turn at the end of this movie that makes it a little more open-ended than most of these movies are. I'm not going to spoil it. But the movie never recognizes the potential for man to have non-physical being. And so it limits and kind of funnels our conclusions like almost every other story of this kind. My favorite treatment of AI may be the new Battlestar Galactica series that was on a few years back, which allowed for the possibility that while man created the Cylons, God intervened and granted them souls. Now, whether this is true or not is, I think, mostly left up to the viewer to decide. They do some wonky stuff in the last episode of that series, but I try to pretend that most of that episode doesn't exist because that series ended horribly in that last episode. But I think for most of the series, you know, they kind of leave that up to the viewer to decide, okay, did God really do this, or are they just saying that or whatever? But they're acknowledging this non-physical component to who humans are, or at least acknowledging the possibility of that. And AI stories outside of that, they just don't, you know, kind of like in, what was that, the Johnny Depp movie, Transcendence or something like that, where he was uploaded into a computer when in reality nothing really gets uploaded. We just copy the file and then we delete the original. So the copy, it's not the original. So I'm not going to spoil this movie for you, but those are basically my thoughts. Oh, yeah, sorry. If you want to, like, another movie that I would recommend is Imposter with Gary Sinise. I highly recommend checking it out in light of the topic of AI. I can't tell you why I recommend checking it out because it would spoil it for you, but if you haven't seen Imposter with Gary Sinise and you're interested in how sci-fi treats AI as a topic, definitely go check that one out. Now, I have no idea what your tastes are, so I'll just imagine if I were a time traveler, what would I say to myself if I were to travel back in time? I'd say, Pater, skip it. You know, skip it. you know, it's got a different tone than lots of other AI movies, but it's, you know, it's well acted, well made, but it's another AI story trying to make you care about a toaster and not giving you any reasons other than what they try to manipulate you into feeling. Call me cold-blooded. But when it comes to examining questions about the nature of humans, the worth of humans, who we are, I would rather pursue truth about that topic outside of fiction, rather than limit my pursuit of truth in that topic to fiction, where really their end game is to engage you by getting you to feel something and to follow your heart. And following our heart is not a reliable way to discover that which is true. We're much better off trying to use our minds for that.
Come forth, all assemble now. The need is upon us. Let the council be assembled, the Council of Geeks, under the headship of Peter Franson. Let those step forth who would represent their various geekeries. I will step forth as your resident Star Trek geek.
And I will step forth as your resident Tolkien geek.
What other geeks will step forth to represent their interests on the Council of Geekery, that we may discuss the various issues of the day from our own unique perspectives? Contact Lord Peter Franzen today and declare what house for which you shall fight and represent in the High Council of Geekery.
Music by Kevin MacLeod, Incompetech.com.
All right, I want to thank Matt McKinney for putting that promo together and coming up with that idea. Although, do I have to be the Lord? Can I be like the jester? Or I want to be the court magician. I want to be the court magician, yeah. So we'll see, Matt, if we can get those roles switched around somehow. Anyway, this is just a cool idea that Matt came up with of just kind of having like a roundtable discussion now and then. I mean, we'll try it as a one-off to begin with and see just kind of how people respond to it and, you know, how it works out, you know. But the idea is just sitting down with geeks that are coming from different corners of geekery and that are into different types of geekery and talking about some of the moral, the spiritual, the philosophical topics that are often a part of or embedded somehow in geek entertainment, and just sharing kind of like what we've noticed our corner of geekery saying about that topic, and maybe all along the way also sharing, you know, our own thoughts, whether they agree with or contrast with what our corner of geekery is saying about that topic. So, you know, topics like artificial intelligence or evolution or the nature of man or good and evil or spiritual beings and what they're like and or human worth or redemption. I mean, there's so many ideas. I mean, as I listed those, there's probably at least a couple that popped out as like, oh yeah, those are totally in movies or in my paper and pencil role-playing game or in the anime I watch or the video games I play or whatever. I mean, these ideas are being played with all over the place. And so you guys hear me blab on this stuff all the time. But when Matt suggested this idea, I was like, that's an awesome idea to get kind of different perspectives and hear what's being taught in, for lack of a better word, even though it's, you know, indirectly many times and unintentional many times, what is being promoted, what ideas are being promoted in different sectors of geek entertainment. So I think I might represent RPG video games in that roundtable. I'm not sure. Although if someone else wants to have that, I have several other angles that I could choose to come from. So the plan is to use Google Hangouts, the video Hangouts, the thing that Google has. Although you don't have to be on video, we're just going to use that as a medium. So I can like do a desktop capture of our conversation and get everybody talking together all at once. I think that'll probably work the best. The first time we do it, there's probably going to be some trial and error and some problems and stuff, but we'll work that out. And hopefully the end product, I think once we get it recorded and edited, you know, which I'll take care of, I think, won't be a problem. So, you're not required to appear on video, although it would be cool if you would. Personally, I would love to just see you guys, you know, and interact with you. I get to see your avatars, you know, sometimes on the forums and whatnot. But anyway, it'd be fun to actually kind of see you. So that's it. If you are interested in being a part of that, or you just want more information about what that would entail, what that animal possibly will look like, go ahead and email me, paeter@spiritblade.com. paeter@spiritblade.com. I want to remind you guys to go over to the YouTube channel. It's Christian Geek Central, all one word, at youtube.com. And I just put up the video this week, Watch Me Hate the Games I Love, which is really just a short little video where I'm playing some games I super duper love, but they are freaking frustrating the crap out of me at the time. And that video is taken from the Extra Life Marathon that I did in November of 2015. And then also, if all goes well, my video of my VidAngel and Ex Machina combo review should be up as well, in which you should be able to see kind of like some of the interface involved with the VidAngel and kind of how that works and what that looks like, so you can maybe get a clearer idea than you did on this episode of kind of what that service is like. And then while you're there, if you would please like, share, and subscribe, that does help to kind of grow our community, which I would love to see, of course, happen all the time. Also, our Spring Agape Geek Out community event is coming this April. This time we're raising funds and awareness for the Orphan Adoption Ministry of Show Hope. God has a heart for orphans and for adoption. Deuteronomy repeatedly commands Israel to care for the fatherless. James tells us to look after orphans in James 1:27, and God himself has adopted all non-Jewish believers into his family. We see that in Romans 8:15. So we hope you'll look at your April calendar and schedule an event, small or large, where you can just, you know, invite those in your life to enjoy something that you enjoy, some geeky thing you enjoy maybe, while helping you participate in what God is calling us to. And then also, of course, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. So if you've got an idea for a segment already, or you just want to be a part of the fun, we want to plug you in somehow and let your voice be heard. It's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, again, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text, so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth. And the idea behind that is to just show you guys, hey, anybody can do this. We are in the most incredible time of human history as far as like the information that's available to us. I think if we would just take advantage of it, we could see a revolution in the members of the church body around the world that we haven't seen since like the printing press, or since Bibles started being translated into people's native languages, you know, so that they could read them themselves for the first time instead of depending on, you know, church leaders to read them each Sunday or something like that. You know, I mean, there's just these kind of like these moments in history where suddenly the accessibility of the word became so much greater than it had been in the past. And I believe that is where we are at now again with the internet and with the resources that are available. I mean, you do have to sift through and figure out, okay, well, what are the credentials of this website? You know, is it trustworthy? But I mean, if you're willing to just take a look at those things, look at the credentials of the websites you're going to, you can find some fantastic free, readily available resources that will, you know, take a book of the Bible that was once weird and boring and strange and suddenly make it come alive with meaning that is relevant to the afternoon you're about to experience, you know? So I really just want to encourage you to kind of see this segment in light of that and as kind of hopefully like a boost of encouragement to yourself. Go and discover what resources are available to you to help the word become more easily understood and therefore applied to your life. That's what God wants his word to do, is to bring us life as it was meant to be, to invigorate us, to encourage us, to equip and empower us to be a part of what he's doing, you know. And there has been no greater potential for that, I believe, than in the time that we live in right now. So anyway, so I hope that you'll join in me in doing that. Getting back now, we're in the book of Hebrews, And we're looking at chapter 11, verses 34 and 35 is where we've arrived. And in the ESV, we're going to start right in the middle of a sentence. It's basically talking about what has been possible through the faith of believers. And so this list picks up right in the middle. It says, quench the power of fire. You know, through faith, these believers have quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Okay, so after the author's list of those who displayed great faith in the Old Testament, we saw a list of names that we worked our way through. And then there's another list of things that happened as a result of that faith. Through faith, believers in Yahweh have seen and done incredible things throughout history, and we're continuing to look at some of those things in these two verses. The believers that quenched the power of fire probably refers specifically to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who refused to worship the golden statue that the king had built. The king sentenced them to death by burning furnace for their disobedience. But Yahweh kept the fire from harming them, even as they stood in the middle of a furnace so hot that it killed some of the soldiers preparing these three men for their execution. And we see that in Daniel chapter 3, verses 14 through 30. An interesting note that I saw about the faith of these men, they were not absolutely sure that God would save them. In Daniel chapter 3, verses 17 and 18, I'm kind of picking up from the second half of 17 and only reading the first part of 18, but that it reads, "He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods." That "but if not," I think, is so interesting. They expressed confidence that God would save them, yet left room for the possibility that he wouldn't. And even in the face of that possibility, they were content to die. The reference to believers who escaped the edge of the sword may refer to the prophet Elijah from 1 Kings 19, verses 1 through 3, or it could refer to David from 1 Samuel chapters 19 through 31. These guys were both on the run from corrupt rulers who wanted to kill them. Their enemies had far superior resources to search and hunt them down, but Yahweh preserved and protected them from death. Believers who were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, could include a broad number of examples. Since the earliest days of humanity until today, God has demonstrated a pattern of taking those who are weak in some form, physically, morally, socially weak in some way, and empowering them to do unbelievable things for God and his people. Those God chooses to do his work and win his battles are often unlikely candidates, which I think is really encouraging to you and I, as we can often beat ourselves up and feel like, you know, we're nothing. There are people that have their lives together so much more than we do and are so much more skilled or whatever. We can just really be down on ourselves. And this is, I think, an important thing to realize, is that God uses the unlikely in his plans. But it's all, and it's because of this, I think, that God's power and his love are made even more obvious. I mean, he just stacks the deck against himself, stacks the odds against himself, and then uses the least likely candidate so that it's all the more obvious that only because of God did this happen. And so that's awesome that even we have an opportunity to be used by God in ways that we would not expect if we are just willing to just kind of yield control to him. The women who received back their dead by resurrection may refer to the woman Elijah stayed with, whose son died of illness and was brought back to life. That story's in 1 Kings 17, verses 17 through 24. It might also refer to the Shunammite woman who lost her son to sudden illness and saw him brought back to life through Elisha's prayer and faith in Yahweh. And that's seen in 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 17 to 37. Those who were tortured, refusing to accept release, may or may not refer to believers whose stories are told in the Old Testament. As was noted earlier in this study, the list of names that we saw a couple verses ago really serves as a placeholder for all believers who exercised significant faith before the book of Hebrews was written. What's noteworthy is the reason these you know, these believers, these vague believers who were tortured, refusing to accept release, you know, the reason that they accepted torture rather than release from it. The second part of that verse says, so that they might rise again to a better life. Now, a more literal translation than rise again to a better life would be obtain a better rising or obtain a better resurrection. And I think the NASB actually says obtain a better resurrection. Maybe the King James too. I can't remember. We've established several times, I think, already on this podcast that God's gift of eternal life is not dependent on our good behavior or self-sacrifice. This verse seems to refer to the future rewards that accrue for believers in proportion to their obedience during this life. You can look at 1 Corinthians 3, verses 11 through 15 for more on that idea of rewards based on obedience in this life. Many of us will probably live our entire lives without facing torture because of our belief in Jesus. So this example of faith, I think, is all the more powerful and relevant as we decide what we are willing to endure for Christ in our mundane day-to-day lives. You know, I mean, all the more, the bar is raised all the more high, you know, by these heroes of the faith that willingly accepted torturous deaths for what they believed. So what's in this for geeks specifically is a question I try to ask myself each time. And I think the common thread in these examples of faith, maybe you see something different, but for me, I noticed that thread seems to be believers facing death or the threat of death. Death is in some ways a very big deal. Psalm 116, verse 15 says, precious in the sight of Yahweh is the death of his saints. God knows the fear that is naturally attached to death. He knows the heavy loss experienced with death. Jesus experienced that loss in John chapter 11, verses 32 through 35. But God also wants us to be free of our fears of death, as we see in Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. And he wants us to begin living right now for the life that comes after this one. As geeks, I think that eternal perspective is really hard to keep in mind. So much of being a geek is about enjoying things that exist in the here and now. And with so many naturalistic philosophical influences in our fiction, we are continually bombarded with this subtle message that this life is the main event and all that really matters. Even as we tell ourselves and each other that, you know, materialism is wrong, we are constantly hungry for new things that will entertain us and or new experiences that will entertain us, and we want all those right now. And we can feel even frustrated or angry or, you know, entitled if we don't get those things. It can kind of put our day in a funk if a movie we were really looking forward to watching and enjoying doesn't pan out, or some game that we bought. It can put us in a funk, you know, for the rest of the day, you know. But faith recognizes that this life is not where we will find ultimate and lasting fulfillment. Faith sees this truth clearly enough to give up on pursuit of self-gratification in favor of serving God and the people around us. I don't want to imply that, you know, it's wrong to desire these pleasurable experiences, but I think that we can put too much weight and too much hope in them. I think that when I am in a funk because a movie I just watched, or even a game I just spent $60 on, you know, and $60 is not, that's not nothing to me in terms of how much money I have available to spend on fun things. So to buy a full release game and to be disappointed with it, you know, I think, oh gosh, I'm totally went off script and it totally is showing right now, but I think I'm putting too much weight on something fun. If even after a significant investment of money, I'm like bummed out, like for the rest of the day, you know, the place I want to be is disappointed and be like, ah, man, but then able to move on and not be in a funk and not feel like, oh, this was supposed to make me happy for the next few weeks or whatever, until I can save up and have another $60 to spend on another game. This was supposed to be the thing that was going to make me happy and make my days easier and stuff. I think if we're giving entertainment that responsibility, then we're living in the now instead of living for eternity, instead of recognizing that, you know what, we are not going to find ultimate fulfillment in this life, and we shouldn't be counting on it or looking for fulfillment especially not in in just the temporary things of this life and pleasure, you know. So faith sees that truth clearly enough, as I have in my notes here. I'll try to get back on track. To give up that pursuit of self-gratification, as I should have put in my notes here, give up on the pursuit of self-gratification as like, well, I stand by my wording there, because it's the pursuit of self-gratification. I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with, you know, something that gratifies yourself in something that you're doing. But I think to pursue that, you know, and we could argue about, okay, well, how much is, you know, how much are you doing when it becomes, you know, what's the point of where it becomes pursuit or whatever like that. So I guess the test I would give myself is, what am I expecting, you know, out of this entertainment? And if I'm expecting something more than just kind of like a temporary fun diversion, then I think I'm expecting too much. I think I'm living in that mindset. I think I'm living for this world. Anyway, okay, let me try to get back on track. There was somebody on the YouTube channel that asked a question that was related to coveting, and so that's kind of on my mind, and that's why that stuff got inserted into my thoughts here just now. So we may never be faced with threat of death or torture, but we are daily faced with the prospect of dying to ourselves in imitation of Christ. That's what Christ did every day. He died to serving himself. And he suffered for it. He had a life that was difficult as a result. The book of Isaiah, I believe it is, that calls him a man of sorrows. And we don't see him constantly weeping and crying. But if you think about the fact that, you know what? Yeah, he lived a perfect life, but that doesn't mean it was easy to him. It doesn't mean it was easy for him to always be living for others and living for God. He surely got a sense of fulfillment, a deep fulfillment that like surpassed momentary pleasure, but he gave up a ton of momentary pleasure. I would say probably the vast majority of opportunities he had for momentary pleasures in life, he gave up in preference to others, or is deference the word? Dang it, Peter, get back on the script. Anyway, but I think you guys get the idea of what I'm trying to put across there. The reward that we gain for choosing entertainment as our source of fulfillment, well, that lasts until the novelty wears off and we have to look for the next cool thing. The reward we gain for choosing death to self each day lasts forever. And I think that's taught in Matthew 6, verses 19 and 20. If this is the reality, then we ought to ask ourselves, okay, well, why am I not walking further out on the skinny branches with Jesus today? What am I, you know, affirming belief in with my words? Oh, yes, I believe that, you know, we ought to live for eternity and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, we can get all those answers right on the written exam and affirm them with our words, even to ourselves. We can say, yes, I believe this. But then why do our actions not conform to that? Why do our actions not reflect what we've told ourselves and maybe others that we believe and that we're committed to? What am I affirming belief in with my words, but not truly buying into, to the point that it actually changes how I approach day-to-day life? And what habit with Scripture and other believers could I maybe experiment with, start up, or restart that will help solidify those truths in my mind and my heart?
Incoming transmission.
Logan Phipps on YouTube asks, "Hey, Christian Geek Central, what is your take on horror movies / video games? Do you think that it is a sin to play these kinds of games and watch these movies because they make you afraid, and being afraid is a sin? Or do you think that the fear is only fake and horror games and movies are okay? Not too worried about this, just curious to see what you think. Thanks." Well, it's on my agenda to do a video on this at some point. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you may remember that I've talked about this before on the podcast, but it's been a long time. There's no article about this on... I thought I had supplemented and re-edited the questionable content article to include my thoughts on this, but I double-checked that and I haven't. So I really need to make a video of this and maybe even an article or something. But for now, I'll just point you guys to episode 111 of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, which you can find at spiritblade.com, then click on podcast, and then go to episode 111. You might have to scroll a bit and click older episodes to find it, but 111 is the episode. And if you start at about 20 minutes and 45 seconds, that's where you're going to hear my thoughts on that. And you might also find the article questionable content that I mentioned useful. Just in general, as you're discerning your way through entertainment, I really tried to draw as much as I could from the Bible. And from what God's word has to say about some of these gray areas that aren't covered. You know, I mean, God didn't say anything about video games and movies or paper and pencil RPGs or any of that stuff in the Bible. Because, gosh, when was theatrical fiction invented? When was the Greeks invented that? And I should remember that, but that's an old high school drama class, and I don't remember the years. I'm terrible with numbers, but. Theater? No, I think theater did exist at least in the New Testament. I could be wrong. I think Greek theater existed at that time. But anyway, there was nothing, you know, remotely like the kind of fictional entertainment that we have today and all the different forms that it takes. But the amazing thing is that God's word. I mean, God brought about the writing of His word in such a way that it could anticipate all future generations and be applicable to all the kinds of things that we might encounter. And it provides everything we need to live life in a godly way if we're willing to really pursue that. So I took all those thoughts from chiefly, I think, from Romans and 1 Corinthians and applied them to sorting our way through entertainment. And so if you go to ChristianGeekCentral.com and hover over Portal, and that'll bring a drop down that you click on Topical. Okay, so ChristianGeekCentral.com, hover over Portable, then click on Topical, and right at the top there you'll see an article called Questionable Content, which hopefully will be useful to you as you're sorting through just entertainment issues in general. What's safe, what's not, what's good and profitable, and what's not, you know, for us to be engaging with as we're enjoying our geek entertainment. Well, as always, guys, I want your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Freaking nailed it, baby! We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or an audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, I just watched the GDC Awards, Game Developers Conference Awards, because that's the conference going on right now. There's some... I'm still hoping for a couple of cool video game announcements. I'd like to know when Final Fantasy IX is going to be released on PC. I want a release date. It's got a page on Steam, but I want to know when it's going to get a release date. And then also Sword Coast Legends. I want to know when that's coming out on PS4. I'm very interested in that. But I did watch the GDC Awards, and I picked up a little game called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes afterwards because of it was up for several nominations, and I think it won in at least one of those categories. And so it really piqued my curiosity. And it's a lot of fun. I played a few rounds with my wife last night. Basically, one person sits at a laptop or PC or whatever, and the system requirements are super low. So even if you have a laptop or something that's not for gaming, you ought to be able to run this. So it's one person is at the computer screen, and you can plug in a USB controller if you want, or use a mouse and keyboard. The controls are very simple, very easy, and they're looking at a bomb, and they can rotate the bomb and look at the different parts of the bomb, and then the other person has a bomb diffusing manual, which you can download online for free in a PDF form, or just look at as a, you know, as a web document. I printed ours out and made a little folder of it. People do all kinds of different things. And the bomb diffuser is not allowed to look at the manual. And the bomb expert, who's the person holding the manual, is not allowed to look at the screen. And so this bomb has a ticking clock on it. And the bomb diffuser has to be like, okay, I'm looking at this thing. It's got four wires. And then there's another panel here. And it says, and it has these numbers on it. And then it's got this little doodad. And then the bomb expert's flipping through their pages and going, okay. So for the wires, tell me this. Does it have this? No. Does it have this? Yes. Okay. Does it also have this? Okay. All right. Clip the blue wire or whatever, you know. And so it totally simulates that classic moment in movies where somebody has to disarm a bomb and they don't know anything about disarming bombs, but someone in their headset knows. And so this is a game you can actually play long distance, you know, via Skype or just on the phone with somebody who has the manual. All they have to do is be able to talk to you on the phone, and one of you, you know, one of you has the game, one of you has, you know, or you can do it at a party. I'm gonna have a game night this weekend for our church's college group, and I suspect this game's gonna be a huge hit. But you know, it's a fun thing. Like for me and my wife, I think it's gonna be a really nice fit because we've tried several games in the past, and she likes puzzle type games and more story oriented type games. Problem with that is you often have to commit, you know, a good like 30 minutes to like problem solve and work your way through those kinds of puzzle type games, and sometimes we just don't have that much time, or we don't quite want to commit that much time, but we want to have a shared experience together. You know, this is something you can like pull up and like defuse a bomb with a 5-minute timer on it or a 3-minute timer on it, you know, and have a little cool, you know, experience with somebody else and then be done if you want. Or you can keep going and disarm as many bombs as you want. And they're all procedurally generated, and they have difficulty settings that you can select to, you know, if you find it too easy or too hard or whatever. We've only done like 3 rounds of it so far, and it's just, it's a ton of fun. Maybe I'll do a review of it or a video of some kind at some point. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. Anyway, more GDC and game coverage for me to enjoy, I think, as I edit this. That's kind of a Friday afternoon ritual for me as I'm editing things. I pull up my laptop next to my desktop PC and pull up maybe some gaming videos or something. And I'm hoping for some fun, geeky news to learn about from GDC. But anyway, I do want to thank Matt McKinney for heading up the High Council of Geeks. And we would love to see that work out, guys. So please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com if you want more information about that. And then speaking of Matt, stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, oh my gosh, the time is finally here. Batman versus Superman arrives in theaters next Friday, and if God allows it, I will be reviewing that and sharing my thoughts with you. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much, guys, for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Okay, just finished watching the 4th episode of the series, A Man Apart. I'm sorry, it was A Man Alone. For some reason, I always keep calling it A Man Apart. A Man Alone. This was a fairly weak episode. Not really bad, but really didn't accomplish much. It was mostly an Odo episode, but it was a series of subplots. There's a really uninteresting subplot about how Keiko O'Brien wants to start a school, and if you watch my POS-TOS review of the episode of the end of the season, In the Hands of the Prophets, you'll see that this is where she begins her reign of hypocrisy. But if you want to see that review, or you can wait for the shawarma of that episode. The story of Odo's story, which is the main story, is that there's a man who comes on the station that Odo detests, tries to kick off the station, and then he ends up dead soon. And the conditions mean that basically it looks like only Odo could have killed him. And so basically Odo has been framed for murder. And what's really odd about this is that there seems to be a lot of hatred toward Odo from the people on the station. They form a mob at one point and actually want to kill him and lynch him. And we never see this come up again. This is a thread that they just dropped, is that everyone seems to hate Odo except for his close friends. Eventually, Odo is just another member of this society, another person. He's the sheriff of this small town, if you will. And they kind of just get over that. So this really didn't go anywhere. I'd say the only really standout thing is Odo himself. He does play this part very well. I like Odo. He's the gruff outsider. He doesn't pretend. He doesn't put on facade. He's very serious, very straightforward. I love Rene Auberjonois. If you've ever seen The Patriot, if you remember the pastor, the gruff-voiced pastor, that was him. That's the same guy who plays Odo. And I've always liked that actor, so I love this role. And this is really the first we really see of Odo. And Odo's part is interesting. It's just the story, again, it's just weak. It's not bad, and there's even an interesting twist, although you can probably see it coming. But if you don't see the twist coming, then it is interesting. We get to see more of Bashir, and we get to see what a dork Bashir is. I promise you, Bashir will get better, because early on, he is just really annoying would probably be the best word. He's smug, and he comes in thinking like he knows everything. In a lot of ways, he kind of represents, he's the guy just out of the academy. He's the greenhorn. But like a good greenhorn, he will eventually get better. Unlike, say, Harry Kim on Voyager, who stayed in that mode. Not much more to say about this. It's, you know, we learn a little bit more about Dax, but that's not going to go very far. You know, if you're just trying to watch The Essentials, you certainly don't need to watch this episode. But it's not a painful one. It's not wretched. It's just a little slow. So, that's about it. We'll see you next time.